Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Caroline, Willie, D-Vegas, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. So all the time around draft season, we hear, this is a good defensive line draft. This is a good wide receiver draft. This is a good quarterback draft. And I don't always think that that's fair, because I don't think that you can really evaluate how good or not good a certain draft is, or specifically at a position, until like 2 or 3 years after. I think now we can look at, let's say, the 2021 draft and say, man, that draft was stacked, because we've seen what some of those players that were drafted in the first round of the 2021 draft, what they have done in the league. Same thing, 2020 was the quarterback draft, and I think that's kind of held up. It's kind of stood the test of time. Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Tua. So we've heard a lot about, okay, this isn't a good wide receiver draft. And I guess because there isn't one or multiple certified top 10 wide receivers in this year's draft, maybe not even a top 15 receiver in this draft, maybe one taken in the top 15, but for the most part, it's a deep receiver draft, but not one emerging receiver that's been like the guy that's going to be your franchise receiver that's emerged in 2, 3, 4, 5 years. We'll see what we think about the receivers in this year's draft. We've also heard, okay, well, next year's draft is a better quarterback draft. Okay, well, not a great receiver draft. Quarterback draft is going to be better next year. Well, Dane Brugler was on with Robbie and Rexroad this morning and said maybe there's a different position group that's also not that good in this year's draft anyways.
When you watch Skoronski or Paris Johnson Jr. or Broderick Jones, what do you make of the top of the offensive lineman group in this draft?
I think it's a solid group, not a great group. I think that's kind of been put out there. That's a really good offensive tackle class, and I don't think it is. And I tell you, scouts don't think it is. NFL teams don't think it's a great group. I think it's an okay group. Paris Johnson Jr., 6'6.5", 315 pounds. He projects as a solid NFL starter. Broderick Jones, some teams have as OT1 on their board because of the upside and where he can be. I think 2, 3 years down the road, he's one of the younger players in terms of on-field experience in this draft, really just a one-year starter at left tackle. And you see his feet, you see the body control, the way he moves, and it's easy to be encouraged about where he is now and also where he's headed. So Broderick Jones is in that mix to be the first tackle drafted. Skoronski is interesting because of the arm length, and it's some teams have their thresholds about what they want at offensive tackle. And this, a lot of people bring up Rashawn Slater coming out of Northwestern a couple of years ago. He was, we talked about arm length. He went in the top 15 picks. He was a pro bowler as a rookie. But Rashawn Slater had 33 inch arms. And for a lot of teams, that's the cutoff. Peter Skoronski has 32 1/4. That's a big difference. I hope he gets a chance at tackle, because I think he can survive there. But I think his best, if we're just talking about maximizing an NFL career, I think Skoronski's more on that Zach Martin path, where Zach Martin could have played left tackle at Notre Dame, could have played tackle in the NFL, no problem.
That is, in listening to him describe Skoronski, it's sort of, I'm not going to say it doesn't make sense, but it's sort of like this, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, because you say, well, you talk about his arm length and everything else, and then you say, well, I hope he does get an opportunity to play tackle. He's not a tackle in the NFL. He's a guard. He's more so projected as a guard. And then he says, well, if you put him at a guard, he's more of a Martin guy.
He'll be a Hall of Fame guard.
Exactly. Well, I want him at guard, right? If that is indeed the case, I'm not putting him at tackle. He's not a tackle. He played tackle because he probably had to. And he probably, because he was the best player on the offensive line, so they wanted to put the best player at the tackle position. But when you project him in the NFL, at the NFL level, he's a guard, not a tackle. Can he play tackle? Yeah, he can play tackle. But where are you going to maximize his ability to play the game of football? At the guard position. So you put him at guard. But, I'm not going to sit here and, say I've studied these offensive linemen because I haven't. But I know two or three guys. And, you know, when you're looking at the depth of this offensive line, if you're just looking at big boards, they got, you know, 10 offensive linemen projected in the first two rounds. Now, whether it goes that way or not, we don't know. But is this necessarily a top heavy? But probably not. But how many times have the NFL draft been top heavy, like real top heavy at the offensive lineman position or the tackle position? There's ones here and there, but for the most part, each year you have a good group of offensive linemen coming out that you could potentially pick within the top 15 or 20 picks. You can at least get three or four of those guys within the top 20 pick. No longer are we looking at offensive linemen getting drafted first overall anymore. Back in the day, Willie, you know that offensive linemen would get, that would be the, you know, the talking point. Is it an offensive lineman? Is it a quarterback? Or is it offensive lineman? Is it a running back? Now you don't hear that as much. Not because these guys aren't good, but because they know the importance of a quarterback in those situations. So typically, or defensive end. Sometimes some teams rank defensive end getting to the pass are more important than a tackle. Mm-hmm. You know?
Those edge rushers, that definitely seems to be something that I think has always been important, but mm-hmm. it feels like it's even more emphasized.
Exactly.
As now. The passing game evolves, mm-hmm. the pieces yes. around the passing game, who's catching passes, who's rushing the passer, all of that stock has improved.
Yes, and if you can't get a reasonable amount of pressure on a quarterback without having to bring extra guys, mm-hmm. I mean, it's so valuable to be able to get to the quarterback with a four-man rush. You know, maybe throwing a fifth in there, but it's just you'll get the days of the Buddy Ryan 46 D where you just bring seven or eight guys. Yeah. That just you get killed
you
these days.
No yeah.
They just pick you apart now. They want you to do that, mm-hmm. right? There was a day where like, oh my gosh, here they come. What are we going to do? We can't block all these guys. Now it's like, okay, bring it. We'll just hit the. You know, if you have a good offense, they kind of, the good quarterbacks. They're fine. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, bring the fifth guy. Bring the sixth guy. We'll figure it out. We're gonna burn you. With those big plays. So those edge rushers become more. I admire these guys for how many hours do you think these guys spend, these draft experts, doing the homework during the season and then in the months right after the season? And then how much are they talking about it in advance of the draft? This is the beauty of it for me. This is probably how Mel Kiper has survived this long. After it's all over in the months after the year coming, does anybody even remember what they were saying leading up to the draft? I don't. You know, I remember little pieces. I'll remember a little storyline. Hey, it's interesting how they got that guy. Remember all this talk? But that's like maybe on one or two guys. Everybody else, whatever they said, the hours leading up to the draft, the days leading up to, I don't really remember.
I remember what they'll say about quarterbacks for the most part. Like, I remember Kenny Pickett had small hands. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest story that just sent shockwaves throughout the NFL was Kenny Pickett has small hands.
And what was the guy, and it probably turned out to be true, what was the guy from California, the guy that went to the Cardinals who loved tennis or something like
Josh
that?
Josh Rosen,
yeah. Oh, he loves tennis. Oh, man, I don't know about that. And sure enough. He's not very good.
Must be
he got traded to what the next season. Yeah. He got traded after one season.
They drafted Kyler the next year.
Yeah, they passed on him very quick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It must be the tennis.
Yeah, it must have been the tennis.
That pesky tennis.
Don't ever take a quarterback who loves tennis. Come on.
I mean, I'm looking at it like, and as we're watching NFL Network right now, mocking Will Levis to the Titans. Jeez, Louise, 11th overall. I look at it like, okay, if it's not a good wide receiver draft, it's not a very deep offensive line draft, the next year's quarterback draft is better than this year, then what the heck kind of draft is it? What in the world?
See, Caroline, this is why the draft should have already happened. You're losing sleep over this.
I just, know.
She's losing faith in the draft.
Watch some NBA games. Watch your Cardinals.
Exactly.
Watch the NHL games. Just put your mind. Let it go.
I can't. I'm like those kids who stay up all night playing video games, and there's a big thing of cheese balls and all these like water bottles around them. Their eyes are red. That's what I'm like. looking at Dane Brugler's content. Just
if you have one of those moments late at night, just call us. Just call us. I'm having problems. We'll talk you through it.
It's like, okay, it's time to go to bed now.
Wake up in a cold sweat about whether Peter Skoronski is a tackle or a guard. Jeez, this time of year just does something to me. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Titans have made a new acquisition, and D. Mace has done his homework. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Ville, D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Join Robbie Stanley from 10 a.m. to noon this Saturday for another Kubota Field event at the Coleman Tractor in White House for their biggest sales event of the year. Demo Kubota tractors, zero-turn mowers, and so much more. That is Coleman Tractor of White House, located at 3613 Highway 31 West this Saturday. So a little bit of Titans news coming out yesterday afternoon. Now, the Titans have agreed to terms with wide receiver Chris Moore. And this wasn't anything that I looked at and I thought, oh, you know, great, wonderful. Now all the Titans' questions at receiver are answered. I personally viewed it as more so a depth piece, add in a veteran wide receiver to kind of go in with some of these young guys. You know, ideally, at least how I view it, ideally they go out and get one, if not two, receivers, one specifically that can start for you right away. Chris Moore is a piece, a veteran piece that you just have on the roster that you can plug and play whenever need be. But D-Mace, you kind of did a little bit of homework on Chris Moore. Your thoughts, your evaluation of Chris Moore and the Titans edition of him?
He's a veteran guy, I think it's going on eight years.
Baltimore, then Houston for a couple of years.
Exactly. So he's been in the league a while. He's been sort of like a journeyman. You know, he was a special teams guy, but he really hadn't played a lot of special teams since 2019. So you can't say, well, we're bringing him in to be, you know, solely a special teams player. He can do it, and I'm sure if he does survive the roster cuts, because just because they signed him now doesn't mean he's going to be on the roster come August, you know, when the season starts in September. So I'm sure they're going to try to work him in as a special teamer as well, too. But last year, he had the best season he has ever had, you know, in his career with Houston. He had over, you know, just shy of 50 catches, just over 500 yards and two touchdowns. He's never eclipsed those numbers prior to that. And he's been in the league, like I said, 7-8 years. I think he's only amassed like a 1,200-1,300 yards in his whole career. But he has returned kickoffs and stuff like that. But he hadn't done a lot of that since, I think, 2019-18 somewhere. So basically what he is a depth guy, a veteran guy that you can bring that understands this league, understand passing games, that can possibly be the fifth wide receiver, but he needs to give you some special teams play as well. I think that's going to be – unless he comes out and really solidify himself as the, you know, fifth guy getting rotation, then he's really going to have to separate himself on special teams, because it's not like he's coming off a season of 1,000 yards. Then they would be looking at him a lot different. He's coming off a season where he basically his career highs was on a team that was a bad team. So I know they're looking at him for depth purposes, veteran, the leadership he can bring in that, because they don't have much veteran leadership inside of that wide receiver room anyway. So when you bring him in, that's good. But you're not counting on him to be, you know, this guy that's going to come in and put up the big numbers. Now, he may give you some numbers. He may get close to that 500 yards. But I just don't see on this team that unless he's cracking that third spot, I don't see him getting close to what he did last year with the Houston Texans. But again, he can come and he can wow everybody and be better than Nick Westbrook-Ikhine or Kyle Phillips and get into that rotation.
But if that's the, I don't want to say ceiling, but mm-hmm. if that's kind of what you're looking at could be a good thing for Chris Moore, being mm-hmm. better than Nick Westbrook-Ikhine and Kyle Phillips, mm-hmm. you're not expecting very much from
yeah,
him.
You can't because of what his career has been. And after 7 years, it's like, unless you just have one of these seasons that's sort of out of the norm, you know what you're getting. He's telling you what you're getting. You're getting a guy that he's reliable. He'll catch the football, but he's not that big playmaker. He's not a guy that's going to affect the game each and every week. And I don't think you're looking – if he does it, great, but you're not signing him to do that. You're still going to either draft a number two or potentially get a number two once some cuts are being made or whatnot. So, but I think it's a good move by the Titans. Again, they're just trying to add pieces to that receiver room that they believe can help. Again, he may not even be on the roster come September. You know, some guys may come in and beat him out. We don't know. But right now, I think he's found him a situation where that wide receiver room is very thin. And he can earn himself a roster spot if he built on what he did last year with Houston Texans and he plays special teams.
I see it like you do, Derek. It's a low-risk pickup. You really have nothing to lose. And if he fits and gives you some decent production, great. You're creating competition. You're pushing the younger guys. You throw a veteran into the mix. He's played in a lot of games, I think 89 games in his career. And last year, like you said, maybe it was just because they didn't have anybody else. He got to play a lot, and he did okay. You know,
season by far last year.
He definitely played more than he's ever played before. But he caught 65% of the passes thrown to him. He was a little below average in efficiency, according to Football Outsider. So he's, you know, he's not in the top. If he were much higher, he wouldn't be sitting there in – you know, late April, looking for a job, right? There's a reason why he was sitting out there. You're not going to confuse him with Jerry Rice. But he might be a nice fit for the offense. You never know. What I don't know is, you know, where's his spot? Is he a slot guy? Can he go on the outside? Is he a little faster? I don't know, you know, where he gets his catches. I don't remember him that much. But as I look at it, I just don't think there's anything you can lose with this. If you're setting the bar like, oh, here's our guy, he's going to be – then that's probably unrealistic. But if he's a nice piece, a nice fit, and he pushes the young guys to be better, then that's a victory.
Chris Moore is not going to be the difference between winning the Super Bowl and having a losing season. It's just an insurance piece. So I kind of felt some sentiment on Titans Twitter yesterday whenever they did make that acquisition was, cool, the Titans found their wide receiver, so now let's focus on other things in the draft. No. That is not how I see it in the slightest. You find a wide receiver, a solid young wide receiver, to put next to Treylon Burks for that to be your tandem of the future. That's what is going to be, you know, the really meat and potatoes of your wide receiver core. Chris Moore is just going to be a supplemental veteran piece that you can plug and play, at least for now. Davis, to your point, he might not even make roster cuts. He might not.
If you go by the Football Outsiders, right, and every team's different, so him on the Titans, and you flip-flop, let's just say Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is on Houston. Who knows what the numbers would have been different. But at the end of the year, Moore did rank higher in efficiency for Football Outsiders than Burks, Westbrook-Ikhine, and Robert Woods. Slightly ahead, but they're all kind of in that same bunch, about league average, slightly below average in terms of efficiency. So none of them really move the needle. Although Burks, we know at his best, flashes something much, much, much bigger than that. And hopefully for his sake and for the Titans' sake, his best days are ahead of him when he's healthy and out there every week. But Moore lines up a lot to me, like Westbrook-Ikhine. It's like, okay, show me who's better here. Is Moore better? And this is what's hard. Like, this is where scouts, I think, and even analytics people are challenged, right? And I'm curious with Rand Carthon's eyes and the guy he brought in who's his analytics guys. When a guy gets to play and Moore played a lot on a team that's bad, not a great passing attack, how do you evaluate those stats? Right? And how do you say, okay, what does that guy look like on our team?
And also evaluating, you know, comparing it to Titans wide receivers from this past season, it's considering who's throwing them the football. You know, multiple games, Malik Willis was in at quarterback. Yep. So that's not necessarily going to give you, you know, glowing reviews of your receivers, the offensive line as a whole, the offensive system as a whole. So, and you could also apply that to the Houston Texans. Who was throwing them the football? The rest of the offensive line, the rest of the offense. Who was running the offense?
And if I remember correctly, Houston was trying to run the heck out of the ball to stay, keep the shorten the game, keep it close. They did that on a number of weeks, right? They didn't sling it all over the place at all. Yeah.
They did a lot, well, at least against the Titans. I didn't watch much other Texans football.
He's a good pass blocker.
Good for you.
Yeah.
It's probably good on your part. Yeah.
He's a good blocker.
You're just not going to. I can't believe I'm hearing that from you.
No wonder he's on the Tennessee Titans.
Sarcastically.
But I'm sure Vrabel was looking at it. Can he block?
He
ran.
Can block and he can play special
teams. I know you're telling
me
about these. Can he block?
Can he block? Yeah, I know he can. But can he block? Okay. He can block. Let's bring him on in. But,
well, I mean, how many times? Vrabel did say that in the preparation of the game that they lost against the Texans. He goes, they have some of the best blocking wide receivers in the league. He did say that.
I know, but
about the Texans. So Moore was part of that.
Again, I mean, okay.
Hand the Super Bowl trophy to the Houston Texans then.
Okay, listen, they're paying him what they're paying him. So I guess, you know, they're not really paying him to catch a bunch of footballs.
Do we know the terms?
Paying him. I didn't see the terms.
I haven't seen it yet.
As well.
And not a whole lot for not a whole lot of time is what I'm going to guess.
Exactly. So, but, like, you know, somebody, you know, you look at Treylon Burks or A.J. Browns, guys like that you draft in the first, second round, especially in A.J.'s case, I've always said blocking is a want to. Coach can't force you to block, or it's you wanting to go out there and help the guys, you know, in the run game. But you're not paying A.J. Brown to be the number one blocker on the team. You're paying him for what he was doing in Philadelphia, being the one of the best pass catchers and touchdown scorers in this league. I ain't paying you to block. I'm paying you to catch footballs. That's what I'm doing. All that other stuff, it's great. But if you ain't catching, I've always said, if you're not catching a football and you're blocking like hell, then we're going to put you a tackle. We ain't putting you a receiver.
Put your hand in the dirt.
Exactly. Put your hand in the dirt. Gain a couple pounds, we'll put you at fullback. We're paying you to block. And you're a wide receiver.
Cody Hollister, team's best blocker.
Exactly. Block, but blocking, I will say blocking, you must, but it's a want to. It's all a want to.
And it's not a sexy thing to talk about when you're talking about receivers.
Yes.
Yeah, he ran a 4.940, but man, oh man, can he block. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We've got a bunch of texts in the text lines. We were right into your phones coming up next. Everything is on the table. The Titans potentially trading up for a quarterback. C.J. Stroud, what's the deal with him? The Titans acquiring Chris Moore, all of the above, all on the table. Caroline Billy D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, tune in to Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on 102.5 and 106.3. The game for the first three rounds on Thursday and Friday of next week. Coverage presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, the new Cumberland.com, Smoky Mountain Tops, Parman Energy, and B&B Flooring. So unless we have thoughts,
let's go to the phones.
Let's do it.
To the phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to weigh in. Gator Tim texts in and says Moore caught most of his balls last year when Cooks was hurt. He was basically their number one, which is great. I mean, last year, Chris Moore, far and beyond, had his best season. Had just shy of 550 yards. That's basically double his last best. I mean, he's had a couple of 200-plus yard seasons. But other than that, he really has just been not used very much. So I think that's, you know, great. It doesn't change my mind about how the Titans are going to use him or the Titans' approach with Chris Moore.
Well, yeah. And you know, yes, he wasn't used much, but you got to – certain circumstances and teams, it's, you know, well, was he good enough to play more? That's what you got to kind of think about it. Was he good enough to play more? And I understand that certain situations warrant a different outcome. Like, for instance, that's why I always look at Andre Dillard and say, well, yeah, he didn't play much, but look who he was playing behind. That's the best offensive line in the National Football League this past season. So it's going to be harder for him to get on the field, especially a starting spot. Moore, where was he playing? It's like you couldn't, you were not playing on teams that were stacked with wide receivers. You were playing on teams that needed wide receivers, that needed people to step up. And you, for whatever reason, it just didn't work out for you. And then when it finally worked out with Houston, you put together, some good tape. And you got some, okay numbers based upon how much you played. So what the Titans got to try to project is, well, if he plays more, what does that mean? But he has to be able to beat the other guys out, too, and potentially your first or second rounder that you're going to draft. I predict they will draft a receiver the first two rounds. You know, whether it's the first round or the second round, they're going to draft one early. So then you got to beat that guy out, plus Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who I still think is a good player. Is he a two? No. He's a boiler. He's a 3-4. Kyle Phillips. I like Kyle Phillips in the slot. Are you going to beat him out? Kyle Phillips is younger, quicker, faster. Racy McMath. So you got a lot to work through. So I know they're looking at this as just an addition. He can help us, not just at the receiver position, but he's going to have to play more special teams.
And can you make those young guys better? Can you push those young guys in different ways? Are you a great locker room guy? These are all things I don't really know. But in hearing that, well, he caught a lot of passes when, his guy
Brandon
was out. Cook was out. Cooks was out. Okay, but I do see a lot of backups go in when the starter goes out, and they can't catch a cold. Right? Yeah. They can't get open at all. So there's some production there. I also don't know, when do the catches go? And that's why I look at Football Outsiders, because they put in context when you catch the passes. Mm-hmm. Is it all garbage time when they're behind and they have to throw and the defense is playing a little differently? I don't know. This is where you – but Football Outsiders has him right in that league average category, slightly below, which is why he's sitting there in mid-April. So, again, this is where I'm really curious with the new way that the Titans are doing. They got a new general manager. They've got a little more analytics influence. So do they hit on some of these bargain guys who they have pinpointed in free agency? They've gone for several guys, no big dollar guys, right? Can we agree? All of the free agents they've signed, including the ones in the first wave, none of them are big, big dollar guys.
Bargains.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I've said, you don't want to go into this season approaching the wide receiver core or the defensive back room how you approached the offensive line last year, which is, let's just hope these guys work out. Let's just hope these guys are healthy or can stay healthy. That was kind of my approach with Racy McMath and Kyle Phillips, is you don't want to go into this season hoping that those two who have been hurt can stay healthy, and you don't want to put all of your eggs in a basket that is kind of unproven. We've seen some from Kyle Phillips. I'm not going to go into this season saying, okay, great, Titans are taken care of because they've got Kyle Phillips, and I think that was the approach with Chris Moore. It's not a big commitment. It's not going to change things one way or another. You've just got a little bit of insurance. That's the key. One texter texts in and says, what would it take for the Titans to trade up to 3? If it's not a lot, I'm all for it. Not a lot is kind of subjective.
Exactly.
It's going to take 2 firsts, I think, minimum. A pick swap this year, first next year, and then probably a couple 2s and 3s within there, but across this draft, next year's draft, and possibly the 2025 draft. If I had to set the price right now, I would say it's this year's first, next year's first, this year's second, and maybe this year's third too, and maybe a second next year. That might be over, that might be a higher price than it actually would be, but that's what I would aim about the ballpark of being.
I remember watching Martin, the great show Martin, and I remember one episode, the plumber came over to unclog the toilet. It was stopped up. And, Martin, Cole, and Tommy was in the house. It turned out to be a really funny episode because they thought the plumber passed away, but he didn't.
Oh.
He sort of kind of like, he had these spells where he just kind of like narcolepsy.
You just fall over.
Yeah, and you don't know, very weak. You can't tell by his pulse. But so he goes in the bathroom, comes back out. So Martin said, well, how much is it going to cost? How much is it going to cost to get this toilet fixed? He said, listen. It may cost you a little. It may cost you a lot. But it's going to cost you. That's what I'm telling you. It's going to cost you. So with the Titans, it's going to cost you. You know, whatever it is, it's going to cost
you. It's going to cost
you. To move up to that number three spot. So if you feel that the guy you want is still there, and I've been consistent with this, and I'm not deviating from it. If you love that person, all of you, Vrabel, Rand Carthon, Amy, everybody, if y'all love this guy, do what it takes to move up to get him. Mm-hmm. If there's some type of trepidation or somebody's like, oh, maybe not. Well, okay. You don't do it. Mm-hmm. You don't do it. You go to the next person. But if everybody's on board, you do what you need to do to move up and get that guy.
Kind of mimicking what Jonathan Hutton said on the show yesterday, when it comes to the quarterback, you don't mess around.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, you know, trade back hoping that that quarterback will be there. Or you don't just stay put and hope that quarterback will fall to you. You don't mess around with the quarterback mm-hmm. position. You do what it takes. You do what you need to do in order to get that quarterback. One texter texts in says, at times wide receivers last year didn't help Malik Willis. I don't want to say that that's not the truth at all. Any game that Malik Willis played, I didn't step away thinking, man, oh, man, if those receivers just could have helped him out a little bit more. I stepped away saying Malik Willis is not ready to be a quarterback in this league.
I do think the lasting image might be when I can't speak for the texter here, but, you know, the Kansas City game where there were a couple of balls where if a guy makes a big catch, man, they might have had enough to beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead. Without Ryan Tannehill, that would have been a huge lift to the season there. And I still came out of that game thinking, man, this is a tough, hard-nosed team.
Totally.
That's going to be there if they can get some guys back. And we all know it just slipped. It's too bad that it went in the direction it did. Just the injuries continued to pile up. And I still think that that's the biggest takeaway from the season, more than anything else, is too many injuries. We could have been talking about a solid playoff team that had a lot to offer. But other than the odd play here and there, you know, the wide receivers did not catch a pass in that game.
Yeah.
But the overall picture, though, when you watch all of the snaps that Malik Willis played, he has a long way to go as a passer.
Yeah, there were a few drop passes. So I can understand recency bias is – well, the last thing I saw was this guy dropped his pass or this guy dropped this pass. And, well, they didn't help Malik Willis. Malik Willis didn't help Malik Willis. And, you know, subsequently nobody else helped Malik Willis either. The offensive line didn't help Malik Willis. But Malik Willis wasn't ready. He shouldn't have been out there.
John Robinson
exactly.
didn't help Malik
John
Willis.
Robinson.
Yes.
Mike Vrabel.
Not
y'all didn't help Malik
succeed.
Willis. Mm-hmm. You know, so everybody didn't help Malik Willis, including himself, you know, so there you go.
Speaking of Malik Willis, there was a question that I asked Jared and Joe and Jared versus Joe last night, and they had kind of a same idea, and let's get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mace. Normally, Elliot Friedman joins us at 1 o'clock. He'll join us a little bit later on, so he will join us in 45 minutes at 1:30. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet. It is Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. So I was on with on Someone Company yesterday for Jared versus Joe. Always a treat for me on a Wednesday afternoon.
I'm sure.
Oh, it is. Babysitting those two. I just love it. But I asked them this question, and we were kind of talking about Malik Willis. We had a couple texts in the text line about Malik Willis, and especially surrounding all of this quarterback talk. Trey Lance trading up for a quarterback in the draft. We've gotten, not just today, but really throughout this entire process, the thoughts and the texts and the concerns of, well, what does that mean for Malik Willis? So I will ask you two the same question that I asked Jared and Joe yesterday. What percentage chance do you give Malik Willis to one day be an NFL starter? And how much should the Titans think about Malik Willis when it comes to the draft this year?
This is what I will repeat every time, knowing that it will never happen. But I always would love to answer that question. Imagine if you could watch Malik Willis in either the USFL or the XFL, even if it were a controlled thing. We're going to give him to you for four starts or for five starts. We don't want him to get too much, wear his body down, whatever. But if you could loan a player like that, to play some games. How much easier would it be for us to answer this question and for the Titans to answer this question? But they're too bullheaded, and they'll never change. I don't ever hear anything about this, but they don't have a priority in developing players, and that is a shame, especially at the most important position in the game. We all want to be entertained when we watch football. That's what it's all about. All sports, it's about entertainment. If you don't have people that are entertained and love your product, they're not going to watch as much. You need good quarterbacks. Develop quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Malik Willis now has to, I don't know if they're going to draft a quarterback or not. We've been talking about it for weeks. They might, and if they do, then where does that leave him? He's in trouble. Mm-hmm. And how does he prove that he can play in this league? How does he prove it? I don't know. It sure would help, though, if you could go play in the USFL. But that's aside. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, it's going to be up to him. To me, if you find a way to be good enough, eventually you will get your chance to play, whether it's in Tennessee or for another team. But he's got to get a lot better. We all know that. I just wonder what he's doing behind the scenes. I do like his makeup, right? Everything I see about Malik Willis, I like. The way he handles himself, the way he talks with his coaches, what people say about him, it's all positive. So I still think there's a chance. It's maybe taking the long road. We know he was not put in a position to succeed last year. Hopefully that will not be a detriment. Hopefully that will, down the road, make him stronger. But I don't know. I mean, that was tough to see him, you know, be in over his head a little bit in some situations last year. So how does he handle that? That's a tough thing.
It's sort of like a I equate it to, in a sense, and it's sort of like you throw a swimmer, and not necessarily a good swimmer, but just learning. And, you know, you just don't throw that swimmer in a 10-foot or 12-foot right. end. You just don't push them, even though they're okay. But you just don't push them in a 10-foot and say, go. That's essentially what the Titans did with Malik Willis. They essentially just pushed him out there.
Totally,
and he should have never gone out there. Mm-hmm. And I bring that up because either that swimmer can do one or two things. Either that swimmer can go out there in that 10-foot, 12-foot, whatever, Olympic-sized pool and take what happened to them, and it becomes sort of that scar for them, and they never recover from it. Or that swimmer can say, all right, I'm going to prove to them that next time they want to throw me out, I'm going to be able to swim laps up and down. I'm going to be able to go underneath the water, hold my breath for however long. I'm going to be much better at this if indeed y'all choose to do it again. So that's the same with Malik Willis. It's either that's going to scar you as a player and you're never going to recover from it, or you're going to look at it as a challenge, as, okay, they threw me out there. It didn't go no way near the way I thought it would as a player. I wasn't ready, but I still was out there. But I'm going to prove to them that by them doing that, it sort of fast forwarded my learning curve. It forced me to do the things over and beyond during the offseason to make sure that when I come back, and if y'all choose to do this again, I'm going to be ready for it. It's not going to be anything like what y'all saw last year. It may not be to a point where we think, oh, he's the second coming of Steve McNair. No, you can see the progression. So I'm with Willie. It all depends on how he takes this. How does it motivate him? How does he prepare himself in the offseason? And everything that I've seen of this young man from a mental makeup, he's going to do the things necessary to improve himself. Now, how much does he improve? I don't know. Will he ever be a starting quarterback in this league? I am not going to definitively sit here and say, no, he won't, because I've seen some bad quarterbacks. I've seen some damn bad play in this league. Guys that I never thought should be starting, and they started. It's just the way it is.
That's not an encouraging endorsement.
But
from the
league, I'm not going to say he can't be a starter in this league. I think all of that is his responsibility. It's how does he take last year? Does he take it as a motivation and then let it fuel him and what he's hearing, let it fuel him? Or does he look at it as it's a scar and I will never be able to get over it? Again, I don't know if he'll be a starter for this team. I doubt it. I really do doubt if he will be a starter for this team. And then my doubt is like high up there. But for another team, he may be. We just don't know the circumstance.
I think the real question might be if they – well, I mean, it's either way. But can you see him being the backup again this year? Second string, no other quarterback on the active roster. Or are we saying we have to have three quarterbacks set aside on the roster, which is another flaw in how the NFL discourages teams from developing quarterbacks. It's so dumb. Quarterback is so important. You should have three quarterbacks on your roster at all times for every game. But they don't.
Look at the 49ers in that game.
Yes,
in that
that should never happen. That should never happen. Yeah. In any game, forget about the NFC Championship game. But this hurts Malik Willis because you're in. He's got to be better on his own without ever having to play a game to prove that he should be the backup. Now, if they draft a quarterback, now what do you do with him? He could do everything right. But if they draft Will Levis or if they draft Hendon Hooker or if they draft C.J. Stroud, where does that leave him? He's toast.
It leaves him in a bad position.
I'll reiterate a sentiment that TD had about a month or so ago. When the Titans decided to let Josh Dobbs go to the Cleveland Browns, that was them telling us that Malik Willis is going to be the backup. Because I thought it was a no-brainer, right? Mm-hmm. You bring back Josh Dobbs. He had days to prepare for that Cowboys game, went out, looked fairly solid doing it. He seemed like the perfect backup, a Vrabel guy. He was smart, team first, worked hard. I thought Josh Dobbs would be the backup. Malik, they'll hold on to, and they'll continue to develop Malik behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that didn't happen. I wouldn't be surprised if you go into this season with Malik Willis as your backup. But that's the question. Can he develop into a certifiable backup in the league? That's not what he is yet. We saw that this past season. And, yeah, that's part of the blame goes to John Robinson for not finding a better option at backup. Malik Willis had no business sniffing the field last year.
If we had never seen him on the field last year and they had gone with Woodside and they had put Willis on the roster, let's just say, or there was a different rule where you could keep your – quote, third quarterback, active, it's a designated spot. Imagine how much more optimistic we will have been just because we haven't seen him.
Yeah, we hadn't seen him.
If your question to Jared and Joe, I think they would have been way more optimistic. Hey, behind the scenes, he's been working hard. I don't know, but we've seen him fail. So now we're much more apt to say, well, he's never going to make it. And that's not his fault. They threw him into the fire.
Let's continue the conversation on the other side. I want your thoughts on it as well. What percentage chance do you give Malik Willis becoming a starter in the NFL? And how much should the Titans keep Malik Willis in mind as they approach the draft next week? All of that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.